whether you like or not, you're my colleagues. Welcome to our audit committee meeting on the 27th of July. We haven't met since when? 6th of April, which was a long time ago. So, if we start then by asking about the minutes of the 6th of April 2021, they were published in the digest number 277 on the 11th of June. I hope you've all got very good memories.
Madam Chair.
And it has to be someone who was present at the meeting who proposes it as a true record. And the same for whoever seconds that. Right. And then do we have apologies?
Yes, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Dodson, who was appointed Councillor Trowbridge's substitute, and also apologies from Councillor Fordham, who hasn't got substitute.
Well, you're very welcome, Councillor Trowbridge. Nice to see you. Thank you for coming. Right then, so if we in fact then begin with our report from Grant Thornton, and it's for Stafford Borough Council audit plan for the year ended the 31st of March 2021. So we're actually talking about last year. And what about Grant Thornton?
I'm advised that their current policy is they're not going to be attending meetings in the flesh. Unfortunately, as this meeting isn't a hybrid meeting, there's nobody present from Grant Thornton, I'm afraid.
Did anyone suggest to Grant Thornton that there could be another means of their attending the meeting?
It's not the council's policy at the moment to hold hybrid meetings other than for licensing and public appeals, I'm afraid.
I've really got to say that I find this very disappointing that they're not here, because if you look back at the minutes of the 6th of March, and I want this minuted please, Jim, we did in actual fact have John Farrar here with us, and John Farrar in fact told us that he was leaving to move on to Pastures New, and he introduced Mr. Sartar Sohab and said that he would be representing Grant Thornton at future meetings of the Audit and Accounts meeting. And I find it extremely disappointing that this has not been the case. Especially, I might add, that whenever I had a meeting with John Farrar along with Bob, he in fact complimented the Stafford Audit Committee and said that you were in actual fact one of the most interactive audit committees that he worked with. And I'm really extremely disappointed that we haven't come along this evening. I think I want to pursue this because I don't want this to be happening all the time. What do we do about their report? Do we just...
Through you, Chair, I have had communications from Aptor who indicated, as Winston said, that the Grant Thornton policy is that they are not attending in-person meetings at this moment in time, and he asked if I could present the report on his subject, you being happy with that, Chair.
So you're going to take us through with it?
Yes, from a different angle, but yes, Chair,
may I ask if Bob will get their salary for doing it?
If that could be minuted, Chair.
Which is why I said the audit fee should be reduced.
Yeah. Madam Chairman, why couldn't we hybrid?
That I don't. That's what I'm asking Jim if he'll please look into, because I do think that when we met with them before, we actually did have a Zoom meeting with them, and I'm not quite sure why we couldn't have a meeting with them. I have attended licensing committee meetings where we have actually had all the officers and the committee members here, and other people have come in to join us at the licensing meeting.
On the screen?
On the screen, yes. And I was just saying, I also thought that we did that with the public appeals meeting that I went to.
That's correct.
Chair, if you're happy, I will take that up. I'll talk to you, Mr. Monitoring Officer, first to establish the protocols for the borough.
and then I'll speak to Aftar about how we deal with that going forward, particularly if Grant Thornton don't change that policy, because I'm very mindful of the need to have them present when we do the audit of the accounts, that they will really need to be in attendance in some way, shape or form. So if you're happy, I'll take that one forward.
Yeah,
and I'll come back to you and let you know.
That would really be helpful. Thank you very much for that.
Chairman, I'm sorry. I mean, I feel as you do. I'm disappointed with Grant Thornton. And if our organisation in the borough has decided we're not going to have microphones on our tables and we can't have meetings with the auditor, we're not deciding whether we should have white paper towels or red paper towels. These are the accounts, this is the borough council's figures, and we haven't got the auditors here. I mean, with due respect to our auditors,
yes,
it's an acknowledgement, isn't it? I'm not an accountant. A lot of this stuff needs explaining, and I'm sure Bob can. I'm sorry, but I feel
they fulfil a different role, a totally different role. And I think, you know, that it is, as I say, bitterly disappointing. And I'm hoping that we're minuting that, and that it's in the minutes that are published in our digest, because that's just, we're just fortunate that Bob is doing this. Perhaps it's because he's escaping that he's doing it.
Thank you, Chair. Just adding to what you said, I think it's fundamental that they are present to win the audit of the council, and I think that's the only way we could take place. So it does need to be a physical presence from the auditors. Again, it's some satisfactory that they're not here tonight, but I think you cannot have an audit of the accounts where the auditors are not present, particularly as well that you want a private session with them as well.
Yes.
So I think that just needs to be re-emphasised. If I may, Chair, then, so the audit plan in front of you effectively deals with the processes and procedures that the external auditors will put in place in terms of the close down of accounts. It goes through the normal issues that we're all aware of, but clearly the audit of the accounts 2020-21 will need to take into account the impact of COVID-19,
yes,
and the additional expenditure that the council accrued in addition to the income that we received from the government. I think one of the issues that comes out of that is that the government's decision to put back the publishing of the accounts from the 30th of July to the 30th of September. So that's already been reflected in the timetable of the auditors are operating to. While we're on that subject, Chair, if I may just add that it's likely that that will be delayed a further month due to the fact that the finance department is about to implement a new finance system, and that necessitates potentially a month delay in the closure of the accounts. But that is normal practice when a new financial system is being introduced.
But that's in actual fact, that's Stafford Borough Council Finance Department,
yes,
is causing
Stafford
that
Borough
to
Council,
happen.
Yes. It is normal practice that due to the need to ensure the new system is fully functioning, that you do get that delay. It's occurred up and down the country in terms of that. That is just due to ourselves rather than the auditors. The audit position is that it'll need to be published by the 30th of September, where our actual production of the accounts will be delayed.
Right. Can I have it minuted then? I don't want it to be later than the end of October, because in the minutes you will, in our agenda tonight, you will see that the audit committee should be meeting quarterly, and if it's beyond October, then by no stretch of the imagination could you say that we are fulfilling our obligation.
Yeah.
Our obligation is to meet quarterly, and therefore we should have this meeting no later than the end of October, please. Thank you. So I want that minute, please.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. So the report deals with the what the auditors will be concentrating on and the normal measures of significant risks, which deals with management override of the controls, the valuation of land and buildings, and the valuation of net pension liability. And I think as members will be aware, we did get the actuary to do a presentation on the pensions to actually
yes.
deal with the governance of issue, governance issues arising from that. So hopefully the audit committee are okay with that. Significant risks identified are stated on page 7. Again, it's the net pension liability and the value of land and buildings. I think as we've flagged up previously, Stafford Borough does not hold any commercial land and buildings as such, so the risk involved in the valuation of those does not have an impact upon potential taxpayers at all. There's a number of authorities who hold commercial residence retail buildings that they take into the private sector. We do not do anything of that. So any valuation of land and buildings is just basically a bookkeeping entry. The valuation of the net pension liabilities that we discussed previously, I think the major change in terms of the audit that will take place for 2020-21 is in terms of the value for money arrangements. Members turn to page 14. There's a revised approach for the value for money for 2020-21, which a new set of key criteria covering financial sustainability, governance and improvements in economy, efficiency and effectiveness. And tied into that as a reporting requirement that's referred to on page 15, where worst case scenario, you have a statutory recommendation coming where they feel that the accounts are not being prepared and the financial planning and sustainability is not up in accordance with best practice. You can have a key recommendation or you can have improvement recommendations. So it will focus upon how the council ensures that it identifies all the significant financial pressures that are relevant to the short and medium term plans, how it attempts to bridge its funding gap going forward, and how it plans to its financial planning, financial resilience. So the value of the money exercise has been considerably extended this year. You'll see later on, as part of the audit plan, that will result in an increase in the audit fee. So if I turn to page 18, the audit fee for 2020-21 is going to increase from the original figure of 40,186 to 61,686. Included in that is the additional work on value for money, £9,000, plus the additional issues that occurred in terms of 2019-20. In terms of 2021 audit fee, as a result of the Redmond recommendations, the government are funding part of the additional increase arising from the recommendations of the Redmond report. But clearly, it's still a 50% increase in terms of the original fee that was proposed for 2020-21. I'm happy to deal with any questions that come along in terms of that, Chair. But just to, in context of the last meeting, on the 26th of May, I did receive confirmation from the Public Sector Audit Appointments panel that they had agreed the increase in the fee variation for 2019-20. The increase went from 40,186 to 57,223. Included in that is the COVID 19 time impact of 9,536 pounds. In terms of that, Chair, I am not signing off the payment of that as agreed at the last committee. There is no justification for the increase as a result of COVID-19 on the external auditors. I've got a further meeting this Thursday with the Public Sector Audit Appointments Panel to tell them that as a council, we're unwilling to pay that extra £9,500, bearing in mind the delays that occur purely due to Grant Thornton's work. So that is being pursued. I think you'll remember, Chair, as you indicated previously, that we have sent a letter. And I'm following that up now, and we'll not accept that as a additional cost of debt.
Thank you very much for that, Bob. Can I actually just add to what Bob has said, where he and I did write and complain quite vociferously about Grant Thornton, and I also filled in a questionnaire that was sent to me, and I was not being very complimentary to them in that questionnaire, because I just felt that I had to actually say it as I found it, because we had so many meetings cancelled because they could not even attend by Zoom. And as I say, I filled in the questionnaire and we wrote a very strong letter, and that was what resulted in our meeting with John Farrer. He said he would meet with us before he moved on. But I would like to hear what the committee think of what Bob has had to say. First of all, are there any questions other than about the audit fee? Did any of you pick up anything in the report from Grant Thornton that you feel you want to mention just now?
Mine's about the fee.
So you were just going to deal with that?
Just the fee, yeah.
Any other points any of you wanted to make? We are presumably accepting this report, but we are also of the opinion that we are not prepared to pay the extra that they are asking for in the fee. And I think in actual fact I want to have a show of hands in this. I'm not just accepting that it's some, and it's committee members only who can vote on this.
Am I cast as a member?
Well, I think you must be, Jim.
I need to ask a question before I...
All right, that's all right.
I wasn't here at all the others, so it's confused me a little, maybe more than the other members. Bob, I'm glad you mentioned the thing, because I had on page 6 that 4,462, and I put my own question, why are we paying this? Everyone's had a coding. But then you said it was 9,000, not 4,000, so I'm a little confused. Point me in the right direction.
9,500 relates to last year's audit fee, and 2019-20, which we are disputing before we actually get onto the 2020-21 audit fee.
That makes more sense now,
right.
Thank you. And so we are disputing that
4,000.
Yes.
Absolutely agree now. Yeah,
right.
Sorry.
Right, so can I have a show of hands on that, please, so that we have a vote on?
1, 2, 3, 4. That's unanimous, Chairman.
That's unanimous, right. Thank you very much. So we are noting this audit report from Grant Thornton. Right, thank you very much for that. And moving forward then, we're moving to the Strategic Risk Register, which is beginning on page 24. And I've really got to say that my...
Sorry, Chairman, I think Councillor
yes.
Grimes...
I want to go back to the fee, if I can, which is, it should have been just over 40 grand, it's now going to nearly 62 grand. What do you think we're actually going to pay in fee? Just as a rough, you know, won't hold you to it, but what do you think it will turn out for?
I think in terms of the fee, it will be closer to the 55,000-56,000. At least, because purely the fact a number of these recommendations followed from the Redmond review, and additional resources are being made available by the government to every local authority in terms of that. I think where we as an authority take a different stance is where we believe that the audit has not been carried out in accordance, and we are charged extra as a standard fee for, as an example, the COVID-19. The working papers that were provided by this council, as accepted by the auditors, were exemplary. There was no additional work, they were done on time, etc. The problem came because they could not operate in a COVID environment as such. They found working from home difficult, difficult in accessing working papers, etc. The staff vacancies that meant that auditors were taken on to another authority. When they came back to look at staff at Boroughs, they had to go back to square one again to revisit where they started off from. And that's where it's totally unacceptable that we should not pick up a cost due to the inefficiencies of either Grant Thornton or another authority. If it was our fault and it was a problem that we created, then, you know, that's if we could hold our hands up and take that. But clearly, there's nothing to do with staff at Boroughs in terms of that. So, you know, that's why we're questioning. Not paying the 9,536, because there was no additional work done other than the fact that Grant Thornton couldn't comply with their own requirements rather than his authorities.
So you reckon it will come out at about 56?
It will do for this year, bearing in mind the other issues concerned. And as I say, the fees are agreed nationally, and additional resources have been provided. I'm not quite sure of the extent of those, but additional resources have been provided. We will take on, you know, the issues that clearly been flagged up previously in terms of that. I think, you know, in that context, and through you, Chair, part of the problem with the audit fee was that when it was originally went out to competition, a number of the partners that were involved with the audit as loss leaders at the end of the day, that did not take into account the fact of who were involved and when you actually had to factor all the workers involved and the number of the partners who were moving out of the profession. The fee has actually increased nationally. An additional pressure is being put on them because of issues at certain councils as well to ensure that the financial reporting standards are met and you know, all our departments are facing similar issues at this moment in time. I think that's why the value for money analysis has now gone forward onto financial sustainability as well.
Happy with that. Thank you for that, Bob. We're going to move on to item 3B of the agenda, and that is the strategic risk register. And before I ask you to speak on this, Stephen, I really got to say that the initial one that was sent out to us really disconcerted me greatly, and I spent a lot of time trying to work out your introduction to it before I got on to the appendix. I just kept thinking, what on earth's going on here? I can't understand all of this. And then it was rather late whenever we got the revised introduction. It was actually yesterday whenever we got it through. So I felt I wasted an awful lot of time on that introduction.
Yeah, I read it as you can for the first time now, Jeremy, and I noticed there were some anomalies in it.
Yeah.
In touch with Steve, which is why you got the...
Yeah, I just couldn't understand it. I kept thinking, why the hell have you been told this?
Yeah, apologies for that, Chair. It was an error in some of the information that's in there. All the appendices were right. It was
yes.
That covering report, which as soon as we were made aware, we did get that sent out. So apologies for that.
Yeah. But it's just sometimes your councillors have an awful lot of paperwork to read. And if you're spending time reading it and you can't understand it, and then you're going from pillar to post. So I just feel that I have to say that to the student. Anyway, carry on. In this, we're being asked to note the strategic risk register and to consider the progress being made. So, right, thank you, Stephen.
Okay, thank you, Chair. In terms of the key issues, they are set out on page 24 of the agenda. So, main elements to look at is the table at 3.1 on page 24, which just gives you a summary of the number of risks. And as you can see, we have actually dropped a risk, and we have one less red risk as well. So we have reduced overall the number of risks and the number at that red level. Over the page on page 25 starts to give a little bit more detail on the systems in there, just updating that we have updated the risk register following on from a major review for COVID, picking that up last year, and this is the position at the 1st of April. We have also updated the risk register in terms of corporate plan changes wherever possible. Members' attention at 5.6, 5.7, 5.8 is setting out the main changes in the risk register. So the risk that has been reduced was risk C8, and that's the failure to put in place safe working practices and social distancing measures to protect employees and the public. This hasn't been lost in its entirety. Risk C6, which is around office capacity and safe working, has picked up some of the residual aspects of that risk, just to make sure that we can continue in that area. 5.8, it sets out the rewording of three of the risks to try and reflect the situation better. Main elements for C3 is to really move away from referring to the pandemic and the lockdowns, as opposed to looking at the impact of national restrictions and the future element of that. As I said, C6 has been changed and is more focused on organisational resilience and the resources we've got to deal with the implications of the pandemic. So it's bringing those two things together. And then risk 40B has been updated to remove reference to the Stone Leisure Strategy and specifically refer to the Westbridge Park elements, the open space elements, which is what is left of the original strategy there. In terms of the remaining appendices, the first appendix is a summary page on 28, 29 and 30, just giving you the movement in those risks. And then from page 31 onwards are the detailed risks with the actions. I say I'm not going to dwell on anything in there in detail, but we're happy to take any questions on that detail from members.
Thank you for that, Stevie. Right, members, are there any questions for Stephen, page 24 to 58? I'm giving you time to get to them because, yes, I can see Roy's got his hand up. Roy, page number, please.
Page number 30, and the risk C7. Are we moving forward on the basis that if we're home working, isn't the risk higher on the basis of hacking into people's computers?
In terms of the risk itself, yes, Chair, the elements are more risky. We've got a lot more connections into the council, people's home networks and other areas. The fact that we're using more mobile devices around and about as well does increase the risk. However, changes that are being brought in, set out, on page 52 onwards is the detail of that risk that sets out the actions that are being taken. There are health checks, there are a lot more security. The intention is, as set out on page 52, I think one of the key ones for that area is to try and limit devices that can access the council's networks and the council's systems to only corporate devices. So at the start of the home working, people were using their own personal devices because it was the only way to connect and carry on home working. There are plans now to try and lock it down so that as we roll out equipment, that is being restricted to council IT equipment rather than personal equipment. So I think it's one of those things that there has been an increase in risk, but there's also been a change in actions and a change in focus for some of the actions to deal with that.
But does this mean that all members are going to get new laptops in order for them to log into the system, or can we still use everyone?
I can't answer that, Chair, but I'll defer to Judith if you
I think probably at some point they will be locked down and we'll only be able to use the council provided ones, but I know that hasn't happened yet. And having had a conversation with the head of technology today, I think we're still some months away from actually taking that step. But I know it's already locked down certain things about where you can log in from, because I think we obviously had some issues earlier in the year, so it's now saying you can't log in from other parts of the world. It's got to be from a UK address. But at some point we're incrementally moving in that direction that you will then be able to log in a council provided piece of equipment. But say it's not just at the moment. I couldn't give you the exact timeline, but he's got in mind for that. It's a sense when it comes within the next 5 or 4 to where on that line are they now?
Right. Anything else any of you want to raise?
Chair?
Yes.
I thought every member either had a council laptop or a council iPad.
They were invited to, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all councillors actually did.
Oh, no. Okay.
As far as I know, they were all invited to say whether they wanted a new laptop or whether they wanted a new iPad. But, yeah, I still think, and some people actually, they were also given the option to, or opportunity to have a second screen.
I've just acquired a second screen, yeah, from the council.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that I'm not sure that all councillors did go for a new piece of equipment. Some people prefer to use their own, and that might be part of the risk, you know, if people are not using the council one. Carolyn, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, I'm one of those prefer to use my own. May I ask a question through you then? If and when this happens in 12 months' time, because I prefer to be fluid, so out wherever I want and look to see if I'm missing something, which obviously won't be able to happen. So will we be supplied with phones so that we can carry on doing that, or is it that we're going to be stuck into sitting down at home to
I would think that it's actually a case of restricting access to anybody unless we can be sure that the access is safe irrespective of the equipment that they're using. That's my interpretation of it. I think we would need the head of technology to explain to us what the problem is. But I thought the problem really was people being able to access our information from anywhere in the world. You know, they might have to actually put blocks, or I've been a member of an organisation where after a certain period of time information was switched off my machine where I couldn't then access confidential information. You know, if I had confidential information sent to me for a meeting, then after a certain period of time that disappeared from my tablet. I couldn't access it any longer.
That makes sense.
And I think, you know, that might be that.
But if they're going to shift everything up into the cloud, then surely it's just going to be a password.
I don't sit in a cloud, I don't know.
Well, my guess is it'll just be a double check. You know, you'll get another sensor so that you can get on to double check who you are and
I think that's what they're actually still working on, you know. I think things move so quickly with IT, don't they? I'm still a wee bit slow at it, but I've got one or two points if you don't have any. One of my points, I need to go back to 31, where we're getting a lot of references made to the head of finance. The head of finance is having there's going to be a lot of onus on the head of finance, but he's just waving bye-bye to us all. I sincerely hope that...
Probably a bigger ritual over there, Chair.
Are we getting assurance that there is someone there who's going to try to fill your boots then?
Thank you, Chair. Emma Fulliger will be taking over as the interim head of finance. What we've done is to actually provide chief accountant, an additional chief accountant, so it's one now specifically for Stafford Borough as well, but one can be chased to provide that support. And clearly, you know, Emma's a very capable person who has provided all the support in to the committee, etc. But we've had to provide that additional support to help fulfil that role.
I wondered also, Bob, if you could explain to me this pool that was established for 2021. It's on page 32, and it seemed that you were the person responsible for it. A business rates pool. What is that?
Which page?
I'm on page 32, appendix 2.
Thank you, Chair. The business rates pool, how business rates work is that any growth that's achieved by Stafford Borough, it is able to retain effectively 50% of it.
Yeah.
50% of it would have to go back to the government.
Yeah.
The pooling arrangements means that local authorities can get together and pool the business rates to deal with any volatility between each local authority. But it meant that that levy, that payment to central government, is no longer required. So it's been able to retain its Staffordshire.
Right.
And basically the borough has benefited greatly as a result of that. So instead of the money going back to central government, it's retained within Staffordshire. The borough, I think, retains 60% of that, and the other 40% has been passed on to the County Council just to actually deal with the additional social care pressures that it's had. So the pool's effectively a means of managing the volatility in business rates within a particular area, we're also having the benefit of retaining that levy. It's been a benefit to the borough.
But we're not having, from what I read here, not all the local authorities in Staffordshire are involved. I'm reading here that it is Stafford, Stoke and Trent. Do we have, you know, I would imagine Cannock District Council. But what about Burton and all those ones? Are they all in? They're all in it, all right.
Everyone was in previously, the previous pool, members of Cannock Jay, Lidfield, Fanworth and East Staff, the Board of Right of Birmingham and Solly Hall, Business Rights Pool.
Oh, don't mention Solly Hall.
That's a sure point. The result of the changes that were brought in 2019-20, a Staffordshire style contract, so all the districts are supported for that pool now. The pool will remain in place until 74% business rights retention is introduced by the government, so it's an ongoing pool until the fundamental changes to work in the life.
Well, I am like Bob, every participant must stay in, you don't have one drop out.
It's so they're all right, so there's...
If one drops out, then it's going to be mistake, the old pool effectively falls.
I think actually I would also like to refer to page 47. Because it just seems that there has been a lot done to actually help our partners here, because they do mention previously about the concern about the risk for partnership, our partners working. But if you look at page 47, the Borough Council have been very helpful to our leisure partner. There's quite a substantial amount of money in grants that has come through there. If you look, there was 250,000 from the Arts Council, and there was 260,000 which the Borough deserved. And then they get 17,851 for an additional top up. And then 124,000 for the gatehouse. And the gatehouse seems to be undergoing quite spectacular renovations, which is good, can only be good for Stafford. And let's hope that it will encourage more people to actually come into Stafford and go to the theatre. Very good. So that's good. Now we're going back to the recommendation, because I need to ask you if you are in actual fact going to note and to...
So noted...
You're noting the strategic risk register, and you've considered the progress made in the identification of management of strategic risks. So have you done that? Because we can't move forward until you have. Right, moving forward then. We're now on to your internal audit report, beginning on page 59, Stephen, please.
Thank you, Chair. This is the internal audit annual report for the last financial year for 2020-21. It's almost the summary and sort of collation of everything that we have done in the year. But before I go on to the annual report itself, I just want to draw members' attention to Appendix 1 that starts on page 62. Most of the items in the annual report will have been to this committee previously. However, anything issued in quarter 4, you won't have had a committee meeting to receive that information. So Appendix 1 just brings that update of anything issued in quarter 4. That's on page 62, 63. Through to page 65 with the follow-ups that were issued. There is one limited report and a small number 3 partial audit. Probably the key one to draw members' attention to is the limited assurance, which is the one where we are raising a few more concerns, and that is around cyber and network security. And there are a number of main areas of concern highlighted in that report that are set out there, and really that's where of the work we did in the quarter, that's probably the ones to take most attention of. The partials were more minor issues around housekeeping on the national non-domestic rates, around some signatures on staff expenses and some issues around the prioritisation and delivery of work on the tree management, but the recommendations for cyber security around legacy applications, access rights, and other areas are perhaps of more concern for members. In terms of the annual report itself, that starts on page 66, again, it just gives a summary of what we've done, an overview of the work. On page 69, it mentions the review of internal audits that we have to carry out each year, and there is an appendix 3 that just sets out some actions. But the overview of the review of internal audit is that we are an effective and compliant function in line with the public sector internal audit standards. There is a note on page 69 that we have to have an external quality assurance review. The last one was done in 2016 and we should be due one in 21-22. We are still looking to have that done, but it will probably be pushed further into 2022 and just a slight delay because of the impact of the ongoing COVID on the team and just to making sure we've got everything properly embedded from some of the changes we've done. Key area really for members is on page 71, the box at the top of page 71, which gives the assurance for the annual report. And that sets out that I'm saying we can give partial assurance in terms of our assurances for the council's governance arrangements. And the main reason for that is really, on paragraph 2.9, the two main IT audits that we've given limited assurance on throughout the year, and the number of others where we've given partial assurance. In terms of that, probably the key one is that cyber network security one that we have just been talking about, and that's something that we do feel is worthy of flagging up for further attention and consideration for the annual governance statement, which is later on the agenda. In terms of the other report, the critical information systems not supported by IT, whilst that is an issue and it's a limited report, we don't think that is quite as significant for the overall governance of the council. Whilst they are main systems outside that remit of IT, the issues that we picked up in that report weren't as concerning as perhaps the cyber and network security because of the impact on that around the whole council and sort of as we've just been discussing, the access to the networks and other things. In terms of the rest of the report, we have page 72 just sets out the number of different levels of audit assurance that we've given. So five audits substantial, six partial, two limited, and three with no opinion. That's not that we didn't feel that those audits didn't warrant an opinion, it's the fact that the nature of them doesn't warrant a formal audit opinion because they're quite narrowly focused around some project management work and around the pensions assurance that we give to Staffordshire County Council, so we don't give them an assurance in the same way. Key for the head of finance and others is that we didn't find any major concerns or any significant weaknesses in any of the key financial systems or key governance systems in there, so that's to give members real assurance on that. And then over the page on page 73 we just set out a little bit about the performance of the audit section. It's slightly below the target of 90%, but we achieved 86% of our planned work. We did revise the plan mid-year that came to this committee. I can't remember now, was it just before Christmas, I think it was, when we brought the revised plan. Unfortunately, we then went into another lockdown that had a little bit more of an impact, so we didn't hit quite where we had intended at that point in time. But I do feel that the amount of work that we've done and the areas that we targeted is enough for you to place assurance that the opinion we're giving is robust and valid enough to inform members when we are considering the annual governance statements later on the agenda. I don't think there's anything else I want to really draw to members' attention on that as we go through. I'm happy to take any questions.
Roy, please.
Can we go back to page 62?
Can I see a lot of my pages aren't numbered? Why is that? What should be I print?
I think so.
It's your printer, manager.
Cyber and network security, six comments there for quarter four. How much progress is being made on this lot, given that probably the norm is going to be for people to work in at home and or in the office, or more home working? This doesn't look good.
If I may, Chair, I'll start and then I think Judith may want to come in as well. She has some. We have just had a brief discussion of some of the actions in the risk register that, that IT are taking around protecting our network, moving to some of the changes. The first point there about some of the older servers and legacy applications that we have, I do know there is work progressing to replace some of those systems quite quickly. We were already on track to replace those. It was just taking time in the procurement and setup, so that some of those legacy systems are being replaced proactively, and that was done being done beforehand. It's just it takes time for some of those areas. There's work in there around updating virus protection and trying to tie things down as well now, so that there was a time when a laptop had to be physically connected to the council's network through a cable before the virus protection was updated. They have moved to that being picked up remotely, so that the computer doesn't have to be physically on our network and it will still pick up the software and the updates. As we mentioned earlier as well, there's work being done on the network to tie it down to the long-term plans, to tie it down to corporate devices, UK-based and other areas, and multi-factor authentication, so that it's not just a password access, it will be a password and then a PIN number or a word sent to a trusted device that's set up for that person as well. So we are moving and have adopted a number of those things. In terms of the exact progress, it's hard for me to comment at this point in detail because we haven't followed up those specific recommendations. All I can say is we have agreed an action plan with the head of technology in terms of the points that we are raising, and we will follow that up in due course, and the progress report will come back to this committee. For me, Chair, I don't know if Judith wants to add anything.
Chair, if I can, just a couple of things to add to that. And before we did our piece of work, in actual fact, the council have been awarded some grant monies to do work on the cyber security side. So the head of technology had already got a plan in place to spend that money and how we were going to address things, and that does address a number of the issues that both Stephen has raised through our internal audit work and through another external review that we've had. They've kind of both identified similar issues and say the action plan going forward does move us along that journey really. So I say some of it is going to take time, and I know in particular one of the systems that has been causing some concern that is imminent any day now to be addressed, and not all of the issues have been cancelled. Some of them have been with the supplier of the system that we've needed to upgrade, so I think it's been frustrating for all concerned with that one. But I was told last week that we were only days away from solving from that.
I think if I may, Chair, just to add to that in terms of the legacy systems, I think from when we started the audit to when we got the final report, we had dropped a number of the legacy servers off from the number we were given at the start of the audit to the end when we agreed the final report. So there is progress, I wouldn't say daily, but an ongoing progress that we should see an improvement. I say, unfortunately, with these things, you tend to get rid of your legacy systems and then the software suppliers and the hardware suppliers start phasing out and stopping supporting newer devices. So it's that ongoing treadmill really that we may always find ourselves having some legacy systems. It's just how we manage those and what we do.
I suppose the other one that is of concern is the virus protection on laptops, etc., where, you know, seems to imply here that some people haven't even turned the laptops on. And if there's, you know, records to be kept and only 50% of the employees have completed the cyber security training, I mean, cyber security training, is that on a module that they can access?
If I may check, yeah, the cyber security training is it was an online course that people could do. I think that has improved since we did our report as well. There has been some push for that, but As I mentioned before about the laptops, there was a time when they only updated the virus protection when you physically put the cable in on the council network. They have now deployed software that will pick up if that device is on, regardless of what network it is, and it will pick up that it's out of date and update the virus protection and tell the council that that's been updated. So there is some progress. It's just making sure that we are there. And as I say, there may be some devices on our list that are sat in cupboards in the council that aren't getting updated and may get ruled out of time. We do have things like training laptops and things. Through the change to home working, lots of those were got out of the cupboards and updated and given to staff to facilitate the home working. So we should see less and less of those type of occasional use devices that have never been plugged in, which probably do give us more of a concern.
So are we saying at our next meeting this 6 will be reduced to 1?
I can't say that. I mean, we would normally follow up 6 months from the report going out. So I wouldn't like to comment at the next meeting where we would be in terms of that myself. And again, some of these things may take longer. It would rely on the heavy technologies sort of roll out of plans and progress to answer that question. But I can give you assurance that we will follow these up and report back. In 6 months from issuing that report, so it probably will be significantly later in the year than the next meeting before I can give a formal update on that.
Right. Carolyn, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was looking at two things. One was the cyber security training, and I'm very disappointed to see that. I know you said it's outdated now a little bit, but I think if you go to any new job now, there's so many things you have to do before even starting. Things like this, if you're using it, we should never have 50% at any point not completed cybersecurity training, in my view. I know you've just said it's moving forward, but that one or two is an issue. 50% is a massive issue in my view. I was looking at the staff expenses and how this one crept through. One form is not certified by a person who was authorised to approve it. How did that creep through? How can someone sign something they're not
proof to? If I may, Chair, in terms of that, these things do happen periodically there. That person was on our authorised signatory list for certain things, but what tends to happen is people in certain positions can sometimes be assumed that they will be able to sign things they don't do. So I think it was just human error in there. It's not that it's a person of a necessarily a wrong level or someone who's totally there. It's normally somebody that the staff are aware of. They don't always physically check back. Changes that we've brought in through the pandemic have improved things, that we're getting more electronic authorisation rather than physical signatures and things like that. We have improved some of the record keeping of authorised signatories as well in terms of where we are with that. But I say, unfortunately, with any of these things, human error can only slip in, and sometimes people recognise a name and they assume it. And it may well be that person was at a level to sign it, they were an appropriate person, but if the actual records to say that person can sign these forms have been done properly by their managers and other things. So there can be any number of breaks in the system that allow these things to come through. And whilst it should never happen, it is, when you put the human element in there, there is always a chance that it will happen. And actually, out of the sample that we did, to only find one isn't a major concern. It's worth noting, but it's not that we found sort of half the things were improperly sounded or elements were there. And again, there was no, on that one, there was no elements that the journeys were incorrect or the person who filled it in was doing anything wrong.
The person who signed it now knows they can't sign these forms.
One would imagine so.
Sorry.
I'm still on the same box. So a significant number of mileage form were poorly completed and did not contain sufficient information. I gather these then weren't paid, is that correct or not?
They didn't contain enough information. Sorry, if I may, Chair, they had all been paid when we looked at them. Now, what that amounted to when we're saying that they didn't contain sufficient information, that's when we go in as an auditor, we pick the form up, we'd expect to be able to almost recreate the journeys or check on a map and say, right, they've got here to here, that mileage is about right. Unfortunately, a number of them, they just put, a common one will be for some of the inspection things out on district or around the borough or those types of things, so they don't actually put an itemised journey in there. There may be other records in the department that showed what they've done, but there wasn't sufficient information with that form as it followed through to say where they've been, so that if we pick that form up, we could recreate it. The managers have all signed them off, so what some of them may have had that information at manager level, but it hadn't progressed with the pool. And as I say, that the biggest one is where people are not giving specific details around the journeys or the breakdown of the mileage. They might say, oh, we've done 60 miles in this day visiting premises, but we don't know exactly where they went. Some of them, it's unclear whether the journey started from home or the office or not. And again, you would normally not count your, if you went straight from home, you would knock off your normal commuting miles. So it's that type of issue that we did pick up in those things. So in terms of the overall, mileage is probably less of an issue now than it used to be, but it is still a big expense that goes through from a chair, I think.
I'm just picking up on Stephen's last comment. We probably don't spend as much in mileage as you might imagine. But, so although there are these errors, that's not what we want anybody to see. But
it's in terms of the
staff expenses generally are a fair number, and probably more so during the last 15
months. Year. I was expecting that to really come down. So we shouldn't see anything next year.
That's it, right. Thank you. Actually, speaking of staff expenses, is there ever an audit done on councillor expenses?
If I may, Chair, yes, we do look at member allowances and expenses, so we would do a review of making sure that the chair allowances, the leader allowances.
I'm not talking about allowances, Stephen.
Yeah,
I'm talking about mileage claims and going out to other places. Do you ever audit claims put in by councillors?
Yes, it will be picked up in the same, and it will pick up everything. So where there's been devices issued and other things, it will go that far to look at. I know staff used to, members used to have consumables through IT and things like that as well. We would look at the whole area as the one audit picking up that area. But where there are legitimate councillor journeys for planning site visits and all those other things that tend to appear on that. We do that periodically. It's not every year, but it does feature on the audit plan and it does come up on a rolling basis. I can't, off the top of my head, remember the last time we did it at our staff and the audit.
I wonder if you should do it. Just give them all a fright.
I can have a look at my book. Members probably wouldn't be aware when we did it, if I may, Chair. It would have been reported through to Democratic Services and other managing officers. Jim's team will be aware when we've done it, because we tend to go and pester them for the information rather than individual councillors. Yeah. But we would be looking for the same type of information that we'd expect you to say, I've gone from here to there, and other things.
I don't imagine you jump into your car and go and test mileage, but it's good to know that that's checked as well. Roy?
Going on then from staff expenses to the next one down, tree management, can I assume that this is due to the pandemic and that this would be rectified?
If I may, Chair, just to clarify that, you're talking about the work not carried out in the timescales. I would like to say it is only due to the pandemic, but the points that we picked up related to the 2015 tree survey and that identified works on different priorities. Now, some of the lower priority work may well have been pushed to the back and may well still not have been done. But we are aware of some issues that we picked up with some of the higher priority work on the 2015 survey that hadn't been done when we carried out the audit in the last year. So that is slightly more concerning, that that higher priority work hasn't been done. Some of that work is being picked up and addressed. Unfortunately, others of it hadn't, and we are aware of an issue where one of the trees actually fell and caused an insurance claim to pay out because the work hadn't been done and it had been picked up to actually be found in the 2015 survey. So yeah, it is a concern, particularly as we're aware, trees can cause a lot of damage and injury at times. It is an area of concern.
And I suppose the second point is basically sloppy staff work.
Yeah, the second point is around that paperwork, that paper trail to say whether it had been done, whether it's been followed up on. So it is difficult to prove whether all of the work that's marked as closed had been. Now, some of that is around somebody perhaps raising a complaint to say, I think that tree has got a problem or you need to come and do it. The jobs were being closed, we didn't know if somebody had been out to look at the tree, whether they had been out and done any work or that, and so it's that poor record. It's not to say that they hadn't, but it wasn't recorded on the system, so we had to flag that.
Great, you happy with that? Peter?
I was just going to ask a question because it makes me nervous, like your technology, I'm sure. So what we're saying, coming back to the computers and so on, are our systems safe, or are we working towards them being safe, or both?
If I may, Chair, I would like to say both of those. I don't think we can ever say with the current cyber risk environment that we live in that any system is totally safe. I mean, if you read the press, there's hacking into the big government departments, GCHQ, we have had issues in some of those other areas. Major corporations and lost data. So I wouldn't say any IT system is ever 100% secure. What we are doing is trying to work towards being as compliant as we can and deal with every issue as soon as we can. I mean, there's been a lot in the press about this Microsoft email hacking where we got into Microsoft records, and Microsoft did issue a patch to fix that. But there was a delay because they had to identify that they had been accessed in and had to close the loopholes. So there's always a window when software suppliers identify a problem before they can issue a fix for us to implement. Mm. So there's always a risky period of insecurities, and with the speed of the hackers and other people out there, they will find these issues and the message will get around them that there's a weakness that they can exploit very quickly. And there's always a window when we are vulnerable, even if we're working to implement fixes and patches as soon as they come out. So we can never say 100% we are secure. We can only ever be as good as we can be.
What makes me real nervous, Chairman, is over the years of being sitting on this committee, how often the technology department is a bit behind or hasn't done something or whatever. And now COVID's coming, but they've gone on top of everything else. It just makes me nervous and twitchy.
Stephen, can I ask, do you know about other local authorities? I'm sure you probably network, but do other local authorities have concerns about their IT departments?
If I mention, it's a difficult one to say. I mean, I think most areas that we look at, there are similar concerns across most local authorities. So they're all facing the same problems. How we fare against them, I think there's some areas where we do well, I think there's some areas where we perhaps do have more issues than some of the authorities I network with. However, some of those authorities are bigger, they have bigger IT teams, they have bigger budgets, their unitaries, their counties, they may have a different slant on things, they may have invested in different technologies, so it's always very difficult to compare. As I say, I think that's probably more a question that needs to be directed to the head of technology around how we feature in benchmarking with other local services, because we will do that, and we will have external reports coming in that I don't always have sight of in terms of where we go. I wouldn't say that we're the best out of the people that I know, but I also wouldn't say we're the worst. It may depend on area by area and specific elements.
We leave technology, but it really is one where when you're going through the agenda, you keep saying, my God, not again. Did you want to make another... James.
James, thank you for that, Stephen. I think I'm inclined to agree with you in terms of your sentiments around the fact that we will never be safe from cyber security threats. I think if I use Microsoft as an example, they invest $20 billion a year in cyber security. So... and even the AGA hack, so I think that's fair to say. The company I work for, they've worked with about 130 local authorities, and I could, with some conviction, I believe that we are behind the curve, but because of COVID, it's clear that we are accelerating, which is good to see, but I do think we should probably start to look and put some timescales on these things.
Thank you for that. Any other comment, Troy?
I was just going to ask that, as before you came in, I was discussing with Sim that it seems that with IT here, we seem to take one step forward and three steps back. And every time we come to a meeting, there always seems to be issues with IT that never seems to be closed off. I'm wondering whether it is now time that we asked for the head of IT to be here at the next meeting so we can have a discussion with him about
it. I think that actually we've got the cabinet member here with us this evening, and I was actually going to suggest that I hope the cabinet member is noting our concerns.
Allow me to speak generally.
Yes, you're the cabinet member, but I do allow you to speak always.
On these points. Pages appendix 1, I mean, that's what I would expect to find on the report. When we were talking about mileage forms, you're quite right, the form wasn't completed correctly. Well, I bet the manager in the department knew where that load had gone, and there was sufficient information in the department for him to sign it on.
Yes.
But it didn't comply with the form. That's what used to happen when I was
That
sort of thing. But there are problems here with IT. I think the first one at the top, it's already been said, there will always be legacy things because as things change. But that's likely to be here every time. But what concerns me more than anything, I mean, Stephen says they're going to, they've agreed an action plan.
Yeah.
I think it would help this committee if you saw that action plan, you saw some dates when these things were going to be signed off.
That's the point.
Yeah. Could we ask then, Stephen, if we could have a more detailed copy of that action plan with a time scale? Judith?
Chair, I think picking up on all the comments that have been made, certainly, yes, we can talk to Peter and ask for a copy of the action plan, and it might be helpful actually if he does come to the committee and explain it. I think it would be better than you hearing it, our interpretation of it, and then that kind of addresses both concerns there. So if we schedule that in, it could probably be the December committee meeting, because the next one will be one where you're doing the audit of accounts, so rather than trying to blur issues, and it will give us time. We probably would have done our follow-up around that time as well, so we could give you some information on our follow-up work, Peter could give you the information on his action plan, and then we can, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get a sense of how far we have moved forward.
Right, so then can we in fact agree that it will be our December meeting, because the October one will be a very full one? Right.
And I think as well, if I may, Chair, particularly on that one, if it's cyber security, we need to consider how we best share that information with members, because if we put that full action plan on the agenda, it may reveal some weaknesses that we don't want in the public domain. There are ways that we can share that detailed report with members without putting all that detail.
It can be a private session for councillors only.
The date when it should be completed, that's the thing you should be interested in, not particularly the detail.
But we can in actual fact have that, Jim, as a confidential item on
And you just said maybe target dates, because you've got to be fair, sometimes it seems...
Oh, yeah, yes, that's what we, you know, that's... that, you know, the auditor is generally, and head of governance is able to help with realistic, you know, we're not here to, we're not experts, but, you know, I think, you know, that with your help and guidance, then we can deal with that.
Yeah.
Can I thank you all for that? And Stephen, thank you very much for that, because there has been a lot of questions put to you.
I've still got one more.
Well, far ahead, that's why we're here.
It's on page 80, it's right sort of at the back of this report.
That should be the last page of this report, too.
Yes, yeah. This is just because I'm a bit thick asking this question, so sorry. To purchase an internal audit working paper system, and you've got a time scale of January 2022 to get this in place. What is that? and is it a huge expense, and can we now afford it because of COVID, or is it already in place?
If I may, Chair, in terms of that, it's something that we are considering. These systems, like anything, can be phenomenally expensive, phenomenally complex, through to more budget systems that are affordable but don't necessarily deliver everything that we want. With the move to cloud-based systems, they probably are becoming more affordable to us. It's something that we've looked at over a number of years, but has always been too expensive. At the moment, their prices are not too bad. It's in there as an action that we are considering, because we still need to have detailed discussions with finance around whether we can and we have the money and the budgets and the things to actually purchase this. What it will be is, at the moment we are working paperless, but through use of the Microsoft Office functionality, sending documents into folders, putting things together. What this will do will actually automate some of that processes. It will put the audit plan into place. It will allow us to do time recording all in one system if we took it with purchasing. So it will improve, I wouldn't say improve the efficiency of the auditors for them, or significantly. It will help us to do that, and it will help us to keep things together, but it will provide more functionality about reporting, creating some of the reports to this committee more easily, and other things out there. So it's something to help my team work better and work in a more structured way within the system.
So it could be an efficiency.
It could bring a lot of efficiencies in the longer term, yes. But it's something that we need to explore and do. There are some elements why we want to talk about it now, and where we may learn to report it, because I think as we've brought to the committee before, there is a potential income earner that we're doing for 12 months that may give us a pot of money to buy the capital costs, because a lot of it is there. The annual money costs are not much, it's that initial setup cost that is normally filled.
You've only got till January 2022, so you need to have those conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. James?
Just on that point there around improving efficiencies and looking towards many things, and you know, that I'm all for that. But rather than it being an isolated thing just within your area of interest, should that not be just something we look at across the local authority? If I look at the planning department as an example, that was internal to the kind of work, that seems like an obvious place that there are improvements that could be made to the process there, which hopefully would free up your time and others in the organisation.
I mean, if I may, Chair, to answer that, it's a difficult one, and I think it's a conversation we were having earlier around these things, that you can buy generic systems, and one of the things, if we can't purchase a bespoke internal audit working paper system, we can look at some of the document management systems that we have as a council, looking at whether those are there, using some of the functionality that's come with some of the newer use of Teams and SharePoint and other things to adapt that. The advantage of having a bespoke system for a function is that it tends to be written for the way that you work. It adds some of that functionality in there automatically, and it's designed for that purpose. If you just use a document management system, you don't get that joined up functionality that you would get from a bespoke system. And that's the trade-off we always have when we're looking at whether we do something corporately or whether we do something for a specific department.
Yeah. With all due respect, I actually believe that buying generic systems becomes very expensive. You're adding more managed service costs there, and I just don't think that is the right approach to my personal opinion. But I think there are ways that, cross department, we could look at and should be exploring how could we use Teams and those SharePoint and those functionalities to improve all. I don't think it should be isolated just to the end user.
Jen, if I can just add to that, there is actually an organisation, a recovery group, that is kind of looking at how we make some of those changes and how to capitalise on some of the things that we have sort of built in, particularly around the use of Teams. So they are looking at that element of it, but at the same time we're also looking at the service specific side of it. Planning definitely is a system that was on the radar before the pandemic. I think that's kind of held things up a little bit in terms of looking at replacement for that, and not just for staff at Borough, but also with kind of Chase Council. Wherever we place big systems, we try to do it together if we can, because there is some cost savings and some synergies from sharing that sort of knowledge, expertise and pain that always goes with bringing the antique system in. So yeah, I think it's going to be a mix of those two to get the best out of it.
Right, have you all... Right. Thank you both very much. And can we just finish on a positive note and say that it's rather nice to see that the follow-ups which were undertaken in the year have resulted into the homelessness and housing advice and the waste and recycling moving up from partial to substantial assurance. That really is a good news story. So thank you very much for that, and thank you, Stephen. We'll move forward then to our final item agenda. Well, before we go, you have noted, I'm assured.
Yes.
I think you're well and truly noted it from listening to you. Right, thank you very much. We'll move on then to you, Judith, please, and we'll hear your governance statement for 2021.
I won't spend long on the covering report. The only thing I wanted to just draw to members' attention on that one is at 3.5, and that's just the summary in terms of progress for last year's annual government statement, the one from 2019-20. So there were originally 7 significant governance issues in the last statement. 5 of those have been completed or are on target to be completed fairly shortly, and then there were just 2 items where there was work in progress. Where anything has been completed, it has actually been rolled forward into this year's statement. So if we turn now to this year's statement, again, I'm not going to go through the front part of that.
No,
I just
okay.
want to focus on section 6.1 towards the end of the document, which sets out the significant governance issues that we're proposing for inclusion in this year's statement. Many of those are carried forwards from last year's one, and a number of those are all related to the pandemic. But there are a few new ones, and there are some that we deferred because of the pandemic that were actually from the 18-19 governance statement. So if I take those individually and go through those, and I don't know, if you want, I'm more than happy to take questions if we go through each one rather than leave it until the end. But I don't have any
you just tell us what page you're on, Judith, and we'll get
me... That I have an issue with, because unfortunately I don't have an internet connection, so I've not been able to pick up the pages, and I've had to rely on my backup copy, which means mine are all...
But I don't have the page numbers either.
I think, if I may, Chair, 611 is starting on page 90 of the agenda.
Right. It's starting on page what?
Page 90.
Right, I'll just put 92 and I won't start numbering them all. No, I'm fine, thanks, because my comments are on here.
Not all your comments are that.
Well, the ones I could see here are.
Right, so for those who have got page numbers, starting on page 90 at 611, the first item we've got there is the ongoing kind of response and recovery from the coronavirus pandemic. So that was written in to last year's one. It really reflects a lot of the work that's been going on during 2021, and there's some residual elements that will continue forward, but in actual fact a lot of it has now been built into the corporate business plan going forward. So I'll say we're continuing to work on it in as we go forward. Similar picture really in terms of financial stability, that's long been a feature in the annual government statement anyway, because of that ongoing uncertainty around local government funding, and again that's reflected in here. We'll continue to keep an eye on that in terms of setting out our financial recovery strategy and then the medium-term financial plan. 613 sets out the issues around the economy of the borough and the delivery of the economic growth strategy, and obviously that's a key element of the council's corporate business plan going forward, and there are some very high level projects featuring within that, which by and large are set out at the foot there in terms of the plans around Stafford Town Centre, the station gateway project, and the feasibility studies around the Golden Community as well. So I said that is a significant piece of work for the borough.
Chair. Sorry, Chair. I just wondered on 6.1.3, you've got the key actions, you've got the three key actions there, and we've got December 2021 for the potential garden community. I wondered if we should have target dates against the other two bullet points.
In an ideal world, I'd have a target date against every single one of them. It's just hard with some of them. They're not, when this talks about like the Stafford Station Gateway project, there'll be dates for individual actions on it rather than the project as a whole. I think that's why they've kind of got that ongoing reference rather than specific dates.
One meeting, please.
Yeah, I was just thinking that you've got the year one delivery of the future high street funds. Without that breakdown to know what's within that year one, how do we know if we're actually meeting that?
I was thinking, the annual government statement just picks it all together at a really high level. Or I would expect all the detailed dates for these to be sat within either the economic growth strategy or the project plans for those individual schemes. That's why it's really hard to summarise them into this one. Where something's perhaps got a finite, an absolute end date, which I think is where the feasibility studies for the garden community come in, there's obviously more of a deadline on that one. It's more specific action than the other two next then, which we've projects with lots of individual actions. I mean, obviously if the garden community goes forward, that in itself then will have lots of individual ones, but that's just picking out one element of that.
Carolyn, is it?
Yeah, may I just suggest then, instead of having ongoing, it should be on target or not on target, and that would solve your problem.
You wouldn't know.
That will come when we do the progress reports against this. We will then report where the progress is at and over the
head. This is also, this is 2021, it's not 21-22.
I see.
You're getting a report on what has gone.
Yeah, but then they know if they're on target, if they've completed the bit they should have completed or not.
Yeah.
If that's what I mean. So either way, even if you're looking at the future, you know if you're on target to do that or you're not.
When we do it in the statement, it should have a target date, and then when we do the progress report, we will do, as you've mentioned, we will then say whether it is on target, and accept that it's quite difficult, if it's only ongoing, to make that full assessment. But we do expect every head of service, when they're filling in their progress update, to say broadly, is it on target, has it slipped a little bit, or is it not progressed at all, and that's how you get those sort of symbols in there to show where it's at. So I say if you were to look at the one from last year, you've got that. So this is just 8 points in time, and we'll do that going forward.
Okay. Right.
Okay. So moving on to 614 and the reference to the council's key contractors and the impact the pandemic had on those. This is primarily around the impact it's had on the leisure industry and Freedom Leisure as the council's leisure provider. It isn't solely restricted though. Certainly early on in the pandemic there were concerns around the council's waste compactor. They didn't materialise, but we continue to monitor that situation. So I'd say again we will continue to do that and work quite closely with Freedom as we go forward. 615 sets out some issues in terms of office capacity, and that has been stretched to the limit over the last 15 months with kind of dealing with day job work, dealing with things, specific projects and schemes that are set out in the corporate business plan, and then having to sort of be involved in both the response and the recovery to the pandemic. It has kind of stretched in all dimensions, particularly obviously in terms of revenues and benefits, the payment of business grants, the economic development scheme to follow that, and then the environmental health schemes involved in test and trace, that has had a significant impact on officer capacity over the last 15 months. 616 in terms of decision making meetings during the pandemic. This really is picking up almost like a current issue more than anything. Now we've sort of transitioned from kind of the virtual meetings back into the real world of in-person meetings. I know there are some concerns that with case rates and sort of ongoing potential for restrictions, we don't have the legislation to fall back on to be able to revert to a virtual meeting. So if for some reason we weren't able to get full attendance, it would have it would impact on the democratic processes of the council, and that's an issue that the monitoring officer has flagged up as a concern to him. It's not caused any problems so far, but there's just that lingering concern now we can't fall back on virtual meetings, that we could potentially have a problem with that. But that's one we're continuing to monitor as we go forward. 617 sets out the scope of the issues around shared services and the fact that, you know, we're now in a position of sharing the chief executive between Stafford Borough and Canning Chains Council, and we've got sort of the next 6 months or so to look at the business case to assess whether that is going to be viable in the longer term, and then further 6 months to develop that action plan. So that's kind of picking up that issue there and recognising that that would have quite significant implications for the governance for this council. 618, I think we've discussed at some length already in terms of cyber security, so that's just picking that issue and bringing it into this domain. Earlier on, Bob referred to the new finance system that the team have been busily inputting, and they're having that challenge of closing down on one system, bringing in the new system. I think it's fair to say there have been some teething problems, and the team continue to work on that. So that's flagged up. Hopefully by next year we'll see that one all dealt with and it won't be an issue going forward. And then the last two items in the annual government statement this year are the two that were deferred from the 18-19 annual government statement, and they weren't considered a priority when we were in the midst of the pandemic last year, but we have now brought them forward for us to look at. And particularly, I think the employees' code of conduct, that'd be an interesting one to reflect on the work that we had actually done, and it was close to when going through the process for approval, when we're actually going to move to home working and the new models that the council's looking at, whether we might need to review that code of conduct in light of all of that and make some changes in terms of what we've learned. And then we've got the ground information governance, and again that's something that was new in fruition, so hopefully we'll be able to move that one forward quite quickly this year as well. So I say they're all of the significant issues that we've either been reporting on to the committee throughout the year, or you've heard about this evening's meeting. So really it's just a case of whether there's anything that members felt that isn't in there that should have been. I think we've had a discussion as a leadership team, take assurances from all the key statutory officers, and that's kind of our summary of the significant governance issues. I say they've taken from Stephen's report, the strategic risk register, and all the work that goes on throughout the year. So that's the draft that we're putting before the committee tonight.
Right, are there any further comments? Because you're being asked to approve this, and if I've got to sign it, then I'm looking to make sure that all of you approve of it. I'm not in the hot seat only, it's you lot as well.
Signing, Madam Chairman, signing.
So are you all quite happy to approve the governance statement? Do any of you have any other questions you want to ask of Judith or of Bob before he goes? You're happy then?
I'm happy.
Are they all happy with that? Right. Anything on any of the appendices? Are you talking them through, Judith? Do you want us just to ask questions?
I'd summarised the forms at the beginning. You know, I think there were five of them that are either completed in full or pretty close to completion, and then there are just a couple of them that work was in progress that have been carried forward. So that very much is around that the recovery strategy, obviously works ongoing in terms of response and recovery, and the council's key contractors at the time we did the update on this work was ongoing with three people and will continue to, while they're still operating under restrictions, and we are going to sort of have to work quite closely with them about how that affects their business going forward.
Right, funnily enough, those pages are numbered in my estimate. Any questions for Judith on any of the appendices? Carolyn, give us a page, please.
101.
101?
Yes, right on top. I know it's quite technical to do it, but capacitor is what I want to ask. Because, in my view, and I may have this totally wrong, things haven't moved as quickly during lockdown as normal, so we've got a backlog throughout everywhere. Have we got the capacity to bring that back to a sensible level and very quickly? If not, have we the money to supply the capacity?
I probably don't have all the information to answer that, but there aren't actually backlogs across all services. I think it's been identified in some areas, particularly environmental health, and relatively for them, with offices having been diverted to test and trace and supporting businesses to reopen. I believe that there probably is a backlog in terms of the inspections they would normally do, and I think that they've been given an extended time period to get that back up to speed. Whether that the head of services yet have a chance to fully assess whether he's got the capacity and how quickly it's going to take him to do that, I'm not too sure. I'd like to answer that on his behalf. I say, you've got that many areas that have got backlogs given that sense. The leadership team have monitored throughout and through the organisational recovery group those services that have been affected and kept those under close scrutiny. So I say, I can't think of the one off the top of my head. I don't know the Bob can think of it. But I say, environmental health is the one that would probably strike me the most, but I think most others, once we got I think for planning, theirs has been as much as anything about volume as well, of planning applications almost. Yeah. I think because people haven't been, how's the year started to kind of progress forward, but I think there were a lot of people who took that time to do home improvements. So I think theirs is directly as a result of it's the increase.
Can I
disagree, Bob?
No, I think just in terms of environmental health, the regulations in terms of inspections were also to actually enable the backlog to be dealt with. So there's been a lifting of the restrictions. So I think the major issue in terms of any backlog is probably just the fatigue that exists within the organisation who've been responding for 18 months to leave. But sufficient resources are there to deal with it. It's just finding the time, etc., and making sure that people take the necessary time off to actually deal with the fatigue, etc. I know revenues and benefits are catching up on there, so it's just applying it naturally over the period of the year to actually get their proper working time rather than trying to take it all at once. There's nothing I can think of that creates a line that's been flagged up in terms of that.
And nothing that could embarrass the council?
Not that I'm aware of. I didn't expect to have seen it reported through the performance reports. It is a range of that magnitude. I'm sure scrutiny committees would pick that up.
I suppose it's balancing the ambitions that the council have, taking those forward at the same time as dealing with that. And I think that's the problem. It's in balancing the ambitions and the aspirations with that work, that exists. And I think that's probably why it's reflected in the government statement about the economic prosperity and all of those initiatives. Taking those forward at pace and dealing with the same time issuing to grant sector businesses, etc., and balancing the two.
I had actually noticed that on page 101. I was thinking about the monitoring the impact on the health and well-being of staff. Because I think that has been quite a concern. Not all staff have been happy about working from home, have they? What kind of monitoring are line managers reporting back into the head of HR?
Chair, if I can on that one, there have been a couple of surveys that have been done independently of staff to see how they're coping and their views on sort of home working and any issues. a lot of support has been provided to managers and then cascaded to staff in terms of support for mental health and wellbeing. We already had an existing occupational health provision that are providing access to counselling services. They also brought on stream during the year another programme that could be accessed in a slightly different way that perhaps dealt with some lower level kind of concerns, particularly the head of HR was reporting to us this morning that there has been a slight increase in take up around things to do with anxiety. So we have put extra resources in, lots of signposting to organisations and say an expectation that managers would keep in close contact with their staff. We know there's still more support, but we have put in an extra layer on that side of things.
Yeah, that's
good.
Carolyn.
Susie, may I jump in on that one? Why hasn't that gone round to members as well? I mean, I found the second lockdown a complete nightmare for me. First time in my life I've felt depressed ever.
Yeah.
And yet we haven't had that facility. I know we don't work for the council, but we're a big strategic part.
Inline revenue thinks you work for the council.
No, but you know, we have that facility to send it round to another. How many of us are there? Is it such a huge issue?
Yeah, I would have to agree with what Carolyn's saying, because I think, you know, quite a few councillors felt that they actually missed the contact with their fellow councillors. You know, it's totally different, you know, being here than it is to actually always constantly be at the other end, you know, sitting up in your room talking to people.
There's
and
no
as you
downtime
say,
with that aggression you get with emails and phone calls.
I can raise that with the head of HR.
That would be helpful.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any limitation in the agreements that were signed up to provide a provider, but I will ask them certainly for that on the
Because it's very difficult to actually chair meetings, you know, over Zoom or over Teams. I know that, for example, whenever I've been in Teams meeting, my nerves are shattered trying to get into the meeting. You know, they are, you know, when I've met you in Teams, and I actually was attending a Teams meeting. It was actually a COVID memorial meeting I was trying to get into, and I kept getting knocked out of it.
Yeah.
And it was really so frustrating and upsetting. I thought, I'm coming in here, and then, you know, I would have Andy saying to me, oh yes, Councillor Loughran's in, and then I would just suddenly be back out again. And I find it very difficult, because you do it. I find that with Zoom, at least you've got the backup of an ID and a password. But Teams, it's potluck with me, you know. I sort of think if I hit the button, and then somebody will say, you're hitting the button too often. And that's a thing. Anyway, that's just me.
Chairman, I think it's a double-edged sword there. Undoubtedly, I think everybody would love to get back together to meet like this every time.
Mm.
But there are those people who have concerns the other way, that it's dangerous. I mean, if you look at the statistics, I follow the statistics regularly.
Well, a lot of men do that, excuse me.
And it's worrying. I mean, we talk about things getting better. Well, 40% of the people who are in hospital are over 55.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not as bad as it was, but it's still 40% of the people. And one of the biggest things that I found out last weekend, although we've been told that the Staffordshire have done extremely well in the rollout of vaccines, if you look, the number of deaths per 100,000, and there are 358 local authorities throughout the country. The worst one is a place called Castle Point, which is either Sheffield. Number four on the list is East Staffordshire. That's the fourth worst place in the country. Stokes next at that 31st, then you've got Lichfield, Staffordshire Moorland, about 41st. We're at 98th at Stafford, and I think South Staffordshire is 113. That puts Staffordshire in the worst quartile across the country. It's not good news. And people can have, you know, I like information to be able to make decisions.
Yeah.
And I don't find I've got enough information.
Yeah, sometimes too much information can be more of a hindrance, can't it? More of an upset.
Well, we should have hybrid thinking. I mean, The government themselves, it's so hypocritical, it's beyond belief. They've sat there in the House of Parliament and the guy from Scotland comes on the screen. Why can't we do that?
Exactly. Yeah. So any other comments for Judith? Can I thank you also, Judith, both for your report and for your...
Could I please ask that we put on record our thanks to the Section 151 officer for all his work that he has done? You know, he's delayed his retirement for at least about a couple of years. I don't think it's anything to do with the extra cash that we're going to receive. But I have found him to be a fountain of knowledge that we lack, and he's imparted that to us and kept us and this council on the straight and narrow ever since I've been on this council. And for me, Bob, thank you.
Can I just, before we move then, since I have been usurped from my position as chair, can I just go back and say, have you in actual fact approved the annual governance statement for 2021?
No.
Right.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Know that autumn would be so much fun.
Right. So can I then... thank you all for coming tonight, and I'd like to thank, as usual, the Cabinet Member for joining us this evening, and can I thank Carolyn for actually subbing for us, and Stephen and Judith for doing such a good job in your report. And Bob, as has been said, I don't think we can really thank you enough, because I think, you know, that from a personal point of view, I feel that you have, I've got to thank you for your guidance. To me as chair of audit, and the help that you have given me in this role. It wasn't a very easy post to take on. I think nobody else wanted it. But, I'm so grateful to you for the help that you've given to me, and the fact that you've obviously been able to help me to understand in some ways what has been going on. I think the whole committee are appreciative of the fact that when we have had difficulties and felt that we have needed special training, then you have in actual fact ensured that we have had that training that we needed. And we all appreciate the fact that this committee has had a great deal of support from the Head of Finance and the others in the team, but we do owe you a great debt of gratitude. And thank you very much. We hope that you all have a very long and happy retirement, because you definitely do deserve it after all the delays that you've had. So thank you very much.
Thank you, dear.
So hopefully you'll all have a safe journey home, and thank you for your attendance and for the work tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.